Okay, so imagine a legal earthquake, like a massive shift in the ground beneath everyone's feet.
Yeah, a real shakeup.
Exactly. Well, that's how some describe Blakely v. Washington and how it impacted the courts.
And today, well, we're going deep into why this case caused such a stir.
So, Blakely, why was it so pivotal?
Well, what's interesting is it really builds on another case you might know, Apprendi v. New Jersey back in 2000.
Okay, Apprendi, I've heard of that one.
Right, so think of Apprendi as sort of setting the stage for how juries and sentencing work together.
Laying the groundwork.
Yeah, exactly. And then Blakely comes along a few years later and kind of throws a wrench in the whole system.
The aftershock that changes everything.
Precisely.
So, to really grasp the impact of Blakely, I guess we need to rewind back to the case itself.
Absolutely. I mean, at the heart of it, you have Ralph Howard Blakely Jr. pleading guilty to second-degree kidnapping.
On the surface, sounds pretty straightforward.
Right, you'd think so, but well, it's anything but straightforward.
That's where the plot thickens.
Oh, it definitely does. So Blakely kidnapped his estranged wife and things escalated. He forced her into a box in his truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and even threatened harm if their son didn't follow in another car.
That's
It
terrifying.
was a serious situation, initially a first-degree kidnapping charge, but then, here's the thing, he took a plea deal
To reduce it.
for second degree, specifically to avoid being registered as a sex offender.
Ah, that's a huge factor, isn't it?
It really is. That plea deal becomes super important in how the sentencing unfolds.
I bet.
Okay, so under Washington law at the time, second-degree kidnapping had a maximum sentence of 10 years.
Okay, 10 years.
But they also had these sentencing guidelines, and for Blakely's case, that meant a standard range of 49 to 53 months.
So roughly what, around 4 years?
Yes, somewhere in that ballpark. But here's the kicker. The judge ended up giving him a 90-month sentence.
Hold on, 90 months? That's way more than like almost an extra 3 years on top of what the guidelines suggested.
Exactly, and that's where things get really complicated.
Yeah, how could that even happen?
Well, see, the judge based that 90-month sentence on a finding of deliberate cruelty during the kidnapping.
Deliberate cruelty meaning.
Meaning, after the guilty plea, the judge went on to make 32 additional findings of fact about the crime.
32.
Yeah, like detailing the extent of psychological harm Blakely inflicted and using that to justify exceeding that standard sentence range.
So Blakely's legal team, I'm assuming they cried foul, right?
Oh, absolutely. Their argument was basically that the judge was acting like a mini jury.
Making decisions that should have been left to the actual jury. And
Exactly.
all this boils down to, well, who gets to decide how severe a punishment should be?
Right. Is it the people through the jury or is it the state represented by the judge? That's the core issue here.
Now, the Supreme Court, they sided with.
They sided with Blakely ruling in his favor.
Wow.
Their reasoning. Only facts determined by a jury or admitted by the defendant, those are the only things that can justify going above what they call the statutory maximum.
Okay, so let's unpack that term, statutory maximum, because it sounds like Blakely kind of redefined what that even means.
You're absolutely right. It's not just about the highest possible sentence on paper.
It's more nuanced.
Much more. So Blakely clarified that the statutory maximum is really the highest sentence a judge can give based solely on what the jury decided or what the defendant admits to.
So in Blakely's case, that 10-year max for second-degree kidnapping, that wasn't the real ceiling because it would have needed those extra facts from a jury.
Exactly. The real maximum became that 53-month limit from the sentencing guidelines, since those were the only facts determined without a jury involved.
So essentially, Blakely shifted the balance of power when it comes to sentencing.
It really did.
And this brings us back to Apprendi, doesn't it? Both cases grapple with this idea of judges potentially overstepping their bounds when it comes to punishments.
You got it. Apprendi already said any fact that bumps up a sentence beyond the statutory max, that's got to be a jury decision.
Right, but Blakely takes it further.
It does. It makes it crystal clear that judges can't use their own findings, their own interpretations, to go above that jury-determined limit.
So a major win for the Sixth Amendment.
Absolutely, but it wasn't without its critics.
Right, because I know there were some pretty strong dissenting opinions in this case.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Justices O'Connor and Breyer, they were particularly worried about the potential impact of Blakely on sentencing guidelines.
In what way?
Well, guidelines are meant to bring some uniformity and transparency to sentencing.
To make sure similar crimes get similar punishments.
Right, and they worried that giving judges less power, less discretion, might disrupt that balance.
So their concern was that while protecting the Sixth Amendment is crucial, Too much emphasis on it could lead to less consistency and make it harder to predict outcomes in similar cases.
Exactly. They felt limiting judicial discretion too much might swing the pendulum too far in the other direction.
I see. So it's not a simple black and white issue. There are legitimate concerns on both sides.
Absolutely. But ultimately, the majority in Blakely felt that safeguarding that right to a jury trial that outweighed these potential downsides.
Yeah, it's a fascinating legal and ethical balancing act, for sure.
It really is, and it highlights just how complex this issue is.
This case, on its face, about one kidnapping. But it clearly has these much wider implications for the whole criminal justice system.
Oh, without a doubt, the impact of Blakely goes way beyond just this one individual case. It really shaped how we think about sentencing, juries, and that whole power dynamic within the courts.
It's amazing how one case can have such a ripple effect.
You said it, Blakely is a prime example of that.
So we've talked about Blakely shaking up how we view the statutory maximum. We've touched on the dissent and the concerns about sentencing guidelines. But I'm curious, what about the practical side of things?
Practical side, what do you mean?
I mean, how did Blakely actually change the day-to-day workings of the courts? I mean, like, how did Blakely actually impact what happens in the courtroom, you know, for judges, lawyers, defendants?
I see. Well, that's where things get really interesting, especially when you consider plea bargaining.
Plea bargains, right, because if judges can't just increase sentences based on their own findings?
Exactly. Then suddenly prosecutors have a whole new incentive to, well, maybe overcharge defendants.
To try and force a plea deal.
You got it. Because if a defendant is staring down a much harsher potential sentence, if they go to trial and lose,
they'd be way more likely to take a plea, even if it means admitting guilt for something they might not have actually done.
That's the worry, isn't it?
This is a tough ethical question. Wanting to protect the Sixth Amendment rights of the accused, but then also not wanting to create a system where innocent people feel pressured into these pleas just to avoid a worse outcome at trial.
A real dilemma. And that's one of the big things Blakely brought to light, this tension between individual rights and the need for the system to actually function.
It's a debate that's still going on today, right?
Oh, absolutely. How to strike that balance.
So Blakely kind of forced everyone involved in the system to rethink their approach.
For sure. Judges, prosecutors, defense attorneys, they all had to adjust to this new understanding of the statutory maximum.
And it wasn't just about plea bargains, right? Didn't Blakely also have a big impact on the federal sentencing guidelines themselves?
Oh, huge impact. Remember how before Blakely, those guidelines were mandatory?
Judges were pretty much bound to follow them.
Exactly. But then Blakely comes along, and actually the case of United States v. Booker that happens soon after, and bam, those federal guidelines become advisory.
Not mandatory anymore.
Right. Big shift for federal judges.
So suddenly they have way more leeway in how they approach sentencing?
Exactly. They could still consider the guidelines, of course.
But they weren't locked in.
Nope. They had the flexibility to depart from them if they felt it was justified.
I bet some people saw that as a positive step, right?
Oh, for sure. The argument was that it allowed for a more case-by-case approach, more individualized sentencing.
Taking into account things the rigid guidelines might have missed.
Right, potentially leading to fairer outcomes in certain situations.
But then there's the flip side, right? If every judge has this freedom, doesn't that also raise concerns about consistency?
That's the other side of the coin, yeah. The worry was that this could lead to more variation in sentencing, maybe even reintroduce biases that the guidelines were supposed to eliminate.
So it's like you're trying to balance this desire for consistency in the law, which feels fair, but also acknowledging that each case has its own nuances.
It's a tough one. No easy answers, but Blakely definitely forced the system to confront these questions.
And it all started with one man's case.
It's amazing how these individual cases can ripple outwards and impact the whole legal landscape.
So we've talked about plea bargaining, sentencing guidelines, the role of judges, but what about the lawyers themselves? How did Blakely change their game plan, so to speak?
Well, if you think about it, Blakely really put the spotlight on the jury.
Okay, so spotlight on the jury. What does that mean practically for, say, prosecutors versus defense attorneys?
Well, for a prosecutor, if you know a judge can't just bump up a sentence based on their own opinion, you got to bring your A game to the jury.
Because
you need to convince them not only that the defendant did it,
right,
but also prove any aggravating factors.
The things that might justify a tougher sentence.
Exactly. Like if a weapon was used or the victim was particularly vulnerable or if the defendant has a long rap sheet, all those things.
Those details matter even more now.
Yeah. If you want to use those to push for a longer sentence, you got to prove those to the jury beyond a reasonable doubt.
No more judge just deciding on their own.
Exactly. And on the flip side, For defense attorneys...
It'd have to be even sharper, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Scrutinizing the evidence, poking holes in the prosecution's case, creating that reasonable doubt in the jurors' minds, that's key.
Because if the jury doesn't buy those aggravating factors...
Then the judge's hands are tied. They can't use them to increase the sentence.
So Blakely really raised the stakes for both sides.
In a way, yeah, the jury becomes even more powerful.
Not just deciding guilt or innocence.
But also having a bigger say in how severe the punishment might be.
It's fascinating how this case, on the surface about one specific kidnapping,
right,
it had these huge ripple effects, changing the everyday reality of how justice works in courtrooms.
That's the thing about landmark cases. They're not just abstract legal theories.
It reshaped the system.
And Blakely is a prime example of that, a testament to how one man's fight for his rights can impact the whole legal landscape.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Blakely v. Washington, what's the one key takeaway you hope listeners walk away with?
I think it's this. Blakely is really about reaffirming that fundamental right to a trial by jury.
At its core.
Yeah. It ensures that when it comes to how severe a punishment is...
The power rests with the people.
Represented by that jury, not solely with the government.
Powerful stuff. It's like the Sixth Amendment isn't just some dusty old legal text.
Right.
It's a living, breathing safeguard.
Protecting against unjust punishment, and Blakely brought that to the forefront.
Exactly. And that principle is still relevant today as we're having these conversations about criminal justice reform, sentencing guidelines, the role of juries. Blakely is a reminder.
A touchstone, you could say.
Reminding us what's at stake.
Absolutely.
Well said. Thank you for taking us on this deep dive into Blakely v. Washington.
My pleasure. Always fascinating to revisit these landmark cases.
It's been an insightful journey, to say the least.